Good morning and a big welcome to This Is Your Racing Life. It's Caulfield Guineas Day and it's great to be back for the first program for the season. And my special guest this morning is one of the champions of Australian racing, and that is Hugh Bowman, who of course has the job today of steering and being aboard the Great Mare Winx. Hugh, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Ryan, and you know, thank you for the opportunity to be on your show and the first one of the season.
Well, it's great to have you here. I know that you flew into Melbourne on Tuesday night and rode Winx first light Wednesday morning at Caulfield. How did she feel in preparation for today?
Yeah, she felt good. She's settled in well to Melbourne, obviously, which is lovely, but she's been going well at home. She's had three gallops Melbourne way at Rose Hill before coming down, so she didn't do a lot on Wednesday. She just basically went out and stretched her legs a bit, 5 3/4, and came home too comfortably on the bridle, so she's all set for this afternoon.
Nice ground on Wednesday morning?
The ground was good. Obviously, the weather was a little hard to catch on during the week here in Melbourne, but it was cold when I landed on Tuesday, but the ground was lovely, and we just hope it's not too firm today. Yeah.
She really is an idol of Australian racing fans, and racing needs an idol. Racing needs a big-ticket horse, and there's no question this mare is what it's all about. We love what she does. We love what she did in the Cox Plate. Running a track record, the argument is there that in the 2015 Cox Plate, she was in the fast lane over on the rail. But the figures show that it was more than that. It was just the most devastating, easiest win we've seen in modern time.
It was a good win. She had things go away. You know, she drew the right marble and, you know, she put herself in the right part of the race. But it was a good speed, which was set up by the cleaner, of course, and a bit of luck went our way when he sort of looked at something and rolled off the fence and gave us the split. But, you know, I mean, racing's a funny game. Sometimes things go your way, sometimes they don't. But there's no denying that she ran the time. And there was a bit of controversy about the track being on pace on the rail, but I'm not so sure about that. I won on the United States that day as well, who just beat Prince of Penzance, and the thing was they were running fast times, and because it's such a tight circuit, and most of the races on that card are a mile, you know, or not most, you know, a mile and beyond, you're doing a full lap at least, and if they're running fast times, it makes it hard for horses out wide. And if you go through the, you know, having spent some time in Hong Kong, if you sit three wide, no cover in Hong Kong, that is just the death seat. You do not win. Figures show you do not win. And I'm not really a stats man, and I'm not really a facts and figures man. But, I mean, when it's something like 3% of horses win, three deep, no cover in Hong Kong, and that's because of the pressure of the races, and they're going fast, and so when you're wide, when you're wide going fast, it takes its toll. And you know, that's the way I read it Cox Plate Day last year. The races were run at fast pace, true, you know, top class race pace, and therefore horses that were wide felt the pinch. And but in saying that, she ran the time, and She did it well, so let's hope she can do it again.
And she beat Criterion and Highland Reel, two top-class international gallopers. They've got the score on the board, even as fresh as last weekend. Highland Reel ran out of his skin in running second in the Act of Triumph, arguably the greatest race in the world.
Well, that's right. You know, I don't think there's any denying the Act of Triumph is the Cox Plate of Europe. Yeah. There's no... and. He's franked the form since running here, and you know, he's done it in America, he's done it in Europe, he's raced well here. Criterion as well, he went to Europe too and raced competitively, so her form has been franked. And I think I'm sure the Europeans have got a very high regard for Winx, and that they tend to like to look after their own in Europe. You know, they don't like to acknowledge our horses as being at their level, but I don't think there's any question that she is, you know, right up there with the world's best, and we're very excited to be a part of it.
Would you like to be a part of her if she goes to the world stage, if she even gets to Hong Kong or to Royal Ascot to, you know, to showcase it to the world?
Look, I'd love to
I know you'd love to be a part of it.
Yeah, look, I'd love to have the opportunity to go and travel with her, but it's something that I don't, you know, look, it's not my decision, and I wouldn't even try and influence one way or the other. I'd be supportive in whatever Chris and the owners decide. Obviously, it is an option for next year, but at the end of the day, first and foremost for me and everyone else is trying to, you know, win back-to-back Cox Plates, and, you know, the way she's going, she's a very good chance of doing that.
It takes a champion horse of the era, the best horse sort of in the land to win the Cox Plate, but it takes a great horse to win the Cox Plate twice. Kingston Town and Northerly and Sunline, and they're the very best, and I can't leave out Fields of Omar, of course. She looks as though she's poised to do it. What sort of responsibility do you feel now? She's public property. You know, the racing fans basically own her.
Yeah, they do, and I mean, that for me it's a great thing, and there's a lot of extra pressure to perform interviews, and there's a lot of interest in myself, in Chris Waller, his stable. Her, of course, goes without saying. You know, she's creating this interest, and for me it's an honour to be a part of it all, but there is a responsibility that I feel, and I'd be lying if I didn't say I did feel a responsibility. I don't feel pressure, but responsibility of a high degree. But in saying that, with that responsibility comes a great deal of confidence, and she gives me a great deal of confidence, and that allows me to, you know, stay quite level-headed. And, you know, when you've got so much confidence in a horse, I don't know, I've never been in this situation, but, you know, it's very exciting, and it's not just me, it's you know, all Chris's staff, his vets, his farriers, the owners, of course, you know, they're just having the ride of their life, as is the rest of us that are with her.
We watch from the grandstands. We cheer Winx because she's the best we have in this country, and she's one of the best in the world. When you're on the track, when you're trotting down to the barrier, even when you're doing track work, but in a race, it's just you and the horse. So there must be an affinity of sorts, particularly with one so good and one that's reshaped your life. How do you get that? How do you create that? Or is it something that just builds in time, the animal and the human?
It just builds, yes. And, you know, to be honest, she's had a couple of public morning gallops this preparation in Sydney, and I can only imagine things are going to be more so now that we're here in Melbourne. So, look, that's something that's coming with the property of being a part of Winx. And like I said, it's her that's creating the interest, and she's great for racing, you know, and I feel a responsibility as a racing participant to promote our sport on the back of what she's doing for it, you know. And I mean, she can't speak, all she can do is what she's doing, and she's doing a great job of it, but you know, people are looking for myself and Chris to explain what she is and how she does what she's doing. And I mean, you can only say things so many times, and it does get a little repetitive, to be honest with you. But you know, I feel a responsibility as a racing man, and you know, a lover of racing, to promote our industry on the back of the achievements that she's doing at the moment. And you know, I'm proud to do that, and I'm honoured to do that. And you know, it also gives me a great understanding of the people that have done it before me with champion horses. And look, I think she's got a bit more to do before we can call her a champion. She's certainly a special horse to me, but you know, she needs to keep doing what she's doing. And you know, as long as she's fit and healthy, which she is, I don't see any reason why she can't.
They say that the great horses know they're good. There's an X factor about them, but the animal knows it's good. Do you find that in Winx?
I guess so. She's a very uncomplicated individual, a little like myself. She doesn't like to complicate things too much. And look, she just likes to go about business. She doesn't really take. She doesn't really respond to affection. She doesn't really respond to anything except business. And that's one thing I've noticed with her. You know, she doesn't appreciate being patted. I mean, everyone with her does pat her, but, you know, she doesn't really appreciate it. It's just part of, you know, she likes to get on. When she walks, she likes to walk fast. When she trots, she likes to trot with purpose. And when she gallops on her own, she gets the job done. And if you gallop her with company, you know, she's just incredible. So, look, it's amazing to explain, you know, even, you know, I've been riding 20 years now, to hop on a horse that's just so much better than the others, it's very difficult to explain. It's hard to understand, let alone explain. So, look, it's a very special moment, not only in my career, but my life. And, you know, I'm very grateful for that. But, you know, I think when it's all said and done, I'll look back and appreciate, you know, what she's achieved. But at the moment, it's about getting the job done. It's about ensuring that she's given her chance to perform at a level that we've all come accustomed to. And for me, it's about delivering her the opportunity to perform at a level that she can. And, you know, that's the way I look at it.
You rode in the Turnbull Stakes, won brilliantly, an outstanding win by Hartnell. You're on preferment, and Hartnell left everyone for dead on the home turn. His wins in Sydney and then his win again on Sunday, they've been awesome. They've been absolutely awesome. Do you fear him if he goes to the Cox Plate?
I think he's a worthy contender. look, I wouldn't say I fear him, but I certainly respect him. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. You've described Winks as being nimble, light on her feet. Explain that.
She's a very well-balanced horse. She's not a huge, massive horse. She's not a big, strong, culty type like Sunline was or Black Caviar, although she was a sprinter. They're very big horses, masculine. She's very feminine, which is unique. And she's light on her feet. I'd say she's the best balanced horse I've ever ridden. And, you know, she can overcome adversity because of that balance. She can change legs and she can do things without sort of losing stride. And, you know, she can almost move a horse without breaking her momentum, which is a unique thing, especially at the speeds that these good horses can go at. So I think that helps her to be... I think that helps define her, you know, from other good horses. You know, she doesn't need to be balanced to strike top gear. She can get herself out of trouble. She's got a good turn of foot, yet she can still build on that speed that she creates. And, you know, I guess that's the difference between being, you know, a genuine Group 1 horse and then being the horse that's just better than the rest.
Once you leave the mounting yard and head to the barrier, it's just you and the horse and the race. What's that feeling like? Because we'll never know that rush when that acceleration kicks in, say 400, 300 from home, when it's, you know, they're at top speed. What is that like on a horse like this?
Well, you know, I mean, when I won the Epsom, I'd suffered significant interference at the top of the straight, so it was a little bit of a blur for me, as was the Cox Plate, being my first sort of major Group 1 victory. Although I've competed successfully, you know, all around the world now when I look back on it. To win that Cox Plate, you know, as the first feature Group 1 winner in Australia or anywhere in the world, you know, the adrenaline was very high for me. And because of the circumstances of the cleaner move, you know, I sort of went for home earlier than I would have had if circumstances been different. So, you know, I wasn't really thinking about her or how she was going. I was just in the moment.
Was it rush of blood?
Absolutely. Very much so. And, you know, it was, you know, am I going to win the Cox Plate? You know, but also you're mindful of the horse and you're concentrating on the horse and keeping her balanced and in her rhythm. So there's a lot of emotion, a lot of thoughts, a lot going through your mind and your body in that sort of moment. But obviously, come the autumn, going through undefeated, still we wanted to see her frank, what she was able to do in the spring last year. But this time in, it's been different. I've been able to really understand and enjoy the moment with her, me and her hitting the post, hitting the top gear, because she's been, you know, much better than her opposition. But that's going to, you know, that's going to change now in Melbourne, because the horses are getting to a distance, the opposition are getting to distances that they can compete at a premium at. So I'm expecting them to, you know, she's going to lift as well, but the opposition's going to lift a lot more. They're going to be, the competition's going to be a lot more worthy than it has been in Sydney, I think. So I'm very respectful and mindful of that. And, you know, like, I don't know, it's hard to explain. It's just, it's a responsibility, and I just try and keep it simple.
You certainly do. We're going to take this break, and then we're going to come back and find out more about the life of Hugh Bowman. This is Your Racing Life at Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating life. My guest this morning on This Is Your Racing Life is Hugh Bowman. Now, Hugh, where is Dunny Doo?
Dunny Doo's in the central west of New South Wales. It's 500-600 kilos northwest of Sydney, between Dubbo and Mudgee. So Dubbo would be a a major rural hub, of course, basically in the centre of the state, and Dunny Doo's about an hour due east of Dubbo, and that's where my family have lived for generations, and they're a farming family that came from my father's side at Scotland initially in the turn of the century, and I think I'm about a fifth generation, well, first generation jockey, but grew up on the farm and from a farming family.
Your dad's Jim and your mum is Mandy?
Yeah, that's correct. So my mother grew up in Gunnedah, and her father, Roger Wotton, was a member of parliament actually for the Castlereagh area for some time in my youth. That's why I remember him as a politician. And my father was in partnership with his father and my uncle. So the three of them were in partnership, which they diluted, when my grandfather passed away. I was 15, so 1995. My grandfather and my father's father passed away, so dad and my uncle went their own ways then. But interestingly enough, my cousin Stuart, who was married last weekend, actually, why he decided to get married on the long weekend is beyond me, but unfortunately I missed the wedding. But we're in partnership now, so you know, I've still got an interest in the rural way of life, although I don't get up there as often as I'd like. It's certainly an interest of mine, and you know, maybe in years to come we might spend a bit more time up there.
I was going to say, when the riding days are over and you've achieved what you've wanted to achieve, would you think about going back on the land?
It's certainly a consideration. Not sure my wife's too keen on that. Christine and I have discussed it at length, and we're pretty happy in the city, but it's certainly something that I, as I said, I'm interested in. And, you know, look, I have no vision of making any decisions about anything beyond what I'm doing at the moment. We've got two young children, Bambi, she'll be three in about a month, and Paige, who is now about 16 months. So we've got our hands full, and, you know, life's good at the moment. So we're not thinking too much about the future, but, you know, we'd like to be in a position where we can, you know, certainly spend some time up at the farm. And obviously Christine being Irish, it'd be lovely to be able to travel over there and spend some time with her family as well.
Yeah, welcome to the world of dirty nappies.
Yeah, well, there you go. It keeps things real, and with all the success and wonderful horses that I'm having the opportunity to ride at the moment, it certainly keeps me very grounded. I think I changed five nappies on Monday morning after riding in the three group ones on Saturday and the Turnbull Stakes Sunday, and I had Warwick Farm races Monday, but it certainly keeps things real.
Means nothing to a baby. looking at your time, you talk of the land and growing up, you're the only son of your parents. I'd imagine on the farm, you know, I'm sure horses were in your life pretty early, because Dad sort of poked around with a few racehorses.
Yeah, Dad's a very keen horseman, as was my grandfather and uncle. I come from a very horsey family. and, you know, an iconic horse family, I suppose, in the scheme of things. But look, you know, that's part of our life. It's part of my life from before I can remember. And, you know, riding horses comes very naturally to me. And, you know, I guess that's because of the upbringing I've had. And although I've had to really hone my skills as far as be a jockey, and, you know, who could have imagined the position I'm in at the moment? I don't think anyone did. And, you know, I still pinch myself, you know, to think that I'm getting the opportunities I am, not only here in Australia, but you know, beyond Australian shores nowadays. So to be recognised as, you know, one of the world's leading riders, you know, is very humbling. And, you know, it's even sort of weird for me to say that, but I guess the reality is I am. And look, that doesn't change who I am and where I've come from. And, you know, I think my upbringing has helped me to be very level-headed, I guess, to an extent. And to be successful, you still need a great deal of confidence and, you know, in what you're doing. And there's no doubt I have confidence in my own ability, but, you know, that doesn't change my roots. And you know, I'm very thankful for the upbringing that I had, and to my parents for what they gave me as a child and as an adolescent. And I'm very thankful of the stable life that my wife provides and children. So, you know, there's a lot more to it than just getting up and going riding horses. You need to be, well, I feel you need to be very stable, you know, away from racing, to keep things real and to keep your head level. And you know, I'm under no illusion that this is going to go forever. I'm in a very fortunate position at the moment, and I'm very, very much enjoying the ride that I'm on, and very respectful of those that have gone before me and the ones that will come after me. But you know, I guess it's hard to put into words, but it's week by week. And you know, at the end of the day, I'm just trying to do my thing and do it as well as I can.
Your mum and dad wanted you to have the best in education, and they sent you off to a top school in Sydney, Scotch College, where you boarded. So you're a bush boy boarding there. But at 15, you still only weighed 37 kilos. That's extraordinary. I know you sort of put a bit on in between time, but I would imagine that's the sort of college in Sydney that's produced, you know, people from the top end of town, barristers and judges and you know, people that go on to make a great success of their profession. I don't know for certain, but I'm just envisaging that would have happened. So how does a jockey come out of that school? Do they want to know you now?
Well, I guess, that's a good question, yes. I have been back to the college a few times and spoken to the to the boarding house, Kirkland Boarding House, who I boarded at for 4 years. But yeah, I am very appreciative of the like I said, the upbringing I had and my parents. I was third generation at Scots. My cousin Stuart, who we mentioned before, he was there with me. My grandfather and uncle, who I was named after, James Hugh Bowman, my great uncle, I beg your pardon, who was fatally injured in the Second World War, you know, they both played for the first 15 at Scots and rode in the first 8 and represented the college in athletics. So they were both quite tall men, very athletic, but the pair of them. My mother's side, my mum's quite short, dad's about my size, so I suppose he was an amateur jockey, as was my uncle and grandfather, you know, so it's in the family. But, you know, I guess I've taken it to another level, being a professional jockey. And, you know, like I said before, who would have thought that I would have had the opportunity to reach the heights that I've reached and, you know, have the success that I've had. But, you know, in saying that, you know, I'm certainly not looking back on what I've achieved, because I feel I'm at the prime of my career, the prime of my life, really. And, you know, with the support of my immediate and extended family, it helps me to continue doing what I'm doing. And you know, it's for me, it's just great to ride good horses, and it's great to look back at the good horses I've ridden and be able to appreciate them. And you know, for me, more than anything else, that's what really makes what I do so special.
Yeah. Hugh, your first ride was 20 years ago. It was at the Mungaree Picnics on a horse called Go Campese. And your first winner came up the same year at the Wellington Picnic Cup, and you won on a horse called Slats. Can you remember those days?
I can. Go Campese was actually my pony club horse. He was obviously a thoroughbred, and he was a very special horse. He's I wouldn't like to compare him to Winx, but he was the type of horse that could do anything. He was very good on his feet. He's a very athletic horse, and, you know, Dad identified him as a horse that, you know, could easily win a maiden. But he could do a load of other things. You know, he was brought up as a stock horse, and, you know, he was a very athletic horse, but he actually broke down after that first up race, and with the rider with a little more experience, he may have well have certainly won his first start. But Slats, also owned and raced by my parents, he was narrowly defeated in the Come By Chance Picnic Cup 2 days prior to the Wellington Picnic Cup, and it's a pity it's a radio show, because it'd be lovely to show the listeners some footage of that. But this horse, if I hadn't tried to pull the whip, probably would have won the Come By Chance Picnic Cup. But in the four horse field at Wellington, he won and won well. And, you know, I think that was my last ride as an amateur. Maybe I had two after it, but turned professional at Easter time in 1997.
And you did your apprenticeship with a very strong racing family up in that district with Leanne and Billy Aspras. Bill was a very successful jockey, Leanne as a trainer. What did you learn doing your time there with a great sort of horse combination like that?
Well, I was very lucky because Billy, as you pointed out, he was a champion country rider of his time. He won a George Made Stakes on Turradoo, and I remember looking up at his photo above the fireplace every night thinking, imagine if I could one day win a Group 1 race, you know. So that's the way my thoughts were going when I was 17 years, or 16 at the time, I suppose, when I started. But look, you know, I look back at those times with mixed emotions. You know, it was hard work, and you know, one thing about hard work is it never killed anybody, and I think it was a good grounding for me to start in the country. You know, obviously I had a great deal of experience with the horses and on all sorts of different levels. I did pony club from before I can remember. I played a lot of polo cross when I realised too small to play football. And, you know, I was very good at polo cross, and I found that very easy, very natural. I enjoyed it a great deal. So I played a lot of polo cross in the school holidays when I was home from Scots. And, you know, one thing led to another, and it was when I was away at school that I realised just how much I love the horses and miss them, and, you know, enjoyed being with them. When I left to go to school at 12, I'd never wanted to see another one. But it's interesting looking back at those times, and it seems so long ago, but at the time, going to the stables, working long hours, and, you know, in between the stable work, I was doing school at Scott's Bathurst, which was, it didn't last long. Mum and Dad were keen for me to keep my studies going, but after one term, I said, no more school. So we left school and concentrated on the riding, and yeah, we've never looked back. But it was great. It was great to have a jockey. You know, I lived with Bill and Leanne for the first 6 or 8 months. So, you know, I saw how Billy lived. I saw how he, you know, managed his weight, and, you know, how he ate and how he managed his gear. And it was just great having someone to help me. Well, show me how they did it. You know, someone to idolise, someone to copy, someone to look up to. And, you know, Billy certainly was an idol of mine, as was Darren Beedman. And you know, like I said, I look back with mixed emotions because it was hard work, but it was certainly worthwhile.
I want to ask you about one red apple, two red apples, three red apples, and there's a story behind that too. She's apples. We'll go for a break. This is Your Racing Life, and a great guy to talk with this morning, the man who rides Winx today, and that is the champion rider, Hugh Bowman. We're back with Hugh Bowman, and we're listening to the Hugh Bowman story. Now, tell me about one red apple, two red apple, three red apple.
Well, that's a good question, because we mentioned Billy Aspros a moment ago. It was him who introduced me to that, and that's to count even. So obviously, so if you're going three-quarter pace on a horse, that's 15 seconds per furlong or per 200 metres. So it's a bit hard to count one, two, three, four, five consistently. So Billy said, I count red apples. So I'd say, looking back on my career, I could have counted maybe a billion red apples with all the track work that I've done over the years. But look,
you still do it?
I still count every time I get on a horse. I don't count when I'm sliding, you know. So if I'm running, so for instance, Winx on Wednesday morning went 5-2 in 26 or 25. So what I do, I count. So 5 furlongs is from the 1,000 metres. So I'll count 15 from the 1,000 to the 800, then to the 800 to the 600. And then from the 600 to the 400, I'll count one red apple, two red apple. And that'll be 15, 15, 15. And then I don't count when I'm letting a horse breeze, because I find if you're counting, you're not concentrating on the horse. Some trainers are very particular about you being, if they say 2 in 24, then you've got to be 24. As I've got more mature and more of an understanding of my horses, although to their detriment, I don't really listen to what, you know, what I'll do is just ride the horse to how I feel it's going. So Winx, for example, if Chris says 2 in 25, she might run 23.9 or 24.1, and it'll feel like 25. But I might ride for Peter Snowden in Sydney, and he might say 2 in 24. And, you know, I might finish off on a young horse 24.5. I won't really go to an exact number when I'm letting a horse breeze, because I think it's, for me, it's just important to feel the horse, and with the respect and acknowledgement from the trainers, you know, they don't question it too much anymore. But certainly when I was younger, they did. They want it how they want it. But I guess that's part of maturing and growing up and finding your way. But you know, but certainly when you're doing the evens, it's very important to be accurate in your times. And I think that's why when Australian riders go abroad, that's why they really excel, more so than if you get the European riders coming here. It takes a very special rider to come here and do well. Whereas, you know, I think Australians over the years, go back to Scobie Breasley and others that have travelled to England, George Moore, of course, Gary Moore himself, you know, Australian riders can go anywhere and ride, and I think that's why, because we're trained and required to ride track work to the clock, and that makes Australian jockeys very good judges of pace.
Your success, I think it's in excess of 1,800 winners and a career that's 20 years on. 56 at the highest level, that's Group 1. Two of those are on Werther in Hong Kong, but they include three VRC derbies and right across the eastern seaboard at the highest level, Group 1 racing. Tell me about Chris Waller. He is an absolute racing phenomenon, and you've had a terrific association, not only with Winx. What makes this guy so good, so special as a trainer?
It's a good question, and it's a question that's regularly asked, although it's interesting that you bring it up, because a few years, when I was in Melbourne riding, say 3 or 4 years ago, when his star was starting to really hit the sky, you know, every time I went to an interview or out to dinner, whether it was casual or formal, informal or formal, all anyone wanted to talk about was Chris Waller, and I really hadn't worked all that closely with him. Obviously, I rode for him, and, you know, he's quite an inverse type of person, you know, an introvert, as am I. So we could spend an hour together and say very little. But, you know, for me, it was hard to sort of explain you know, in these conversations. But as Winx has come along, it's wonderful because now everyone wants to talk about her and not him, so it makes it a bit easier for me. But Chris and I have obviously had a wonderful association that's been built over some years now, and look, it hasn't all been smooth sailing. You know, we've had our differences, and you know, I've brushed him for putting other riders on, and he's brushed me for taking other rides over the years. But I think together we've grown and matured, and you know, I wouldn't say that I've been a significant part of his success, and I wouldn't say that he's been a significant part of mine. But I think together we've certainly gelled and grown together, and you know, I'd like to think that that will continue, and I can't see any reason why it won't in the near future. But look, Winx has really brought our relationship as trainer and jockey to a new level, and you know, I think we have a great deal of respect for one another, and even in the down times, I don't think that respect ever wavered. But you know, over the last sort of 12 or 18 months, you know, we've really worked well together. And you know, I travelled to Japan and rode, you know, for 3 of the last 12 months, which probably didn't work all that well for him, but it was something I felt that I needed to do. And you know, travelling for me is, I think, looking back, you know, going to England in 2007 or Ireland in 2003, Hong Kong in 2013, I think it was. You know, travelling to different jurisdictions and looking and learning and seeing how other people do it. You know, I think it gives you great grounding. And Japan, I mean, out of all the places I've been, I didn't feel out of my comfort zone anywhere near like I did when I was in Japan. And I guess that was, one, the weight. I was required to ride 55, which is really rock bottom for me. And the language, of course, you know, very little English spoken there. But look, I think all the time that I've spent overseas has really helped me mature, not only as a person, but as a rider. And there's nothing that makes you improve like getting out of your comfort zone, I can assure you. And, you know, being here in Australia, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, I feel very comfortable with the position I'm in. You know, obviously I'm recognised as one of the leading riders in the country, and, you know, I'm very proud of that, and I'm very comfortable with that. But, you know, I think travelling overseas gives you a whole new dimension, and, you know, I think it's done me wonders.
At 36, have you got that sort of out of your system now? You're happy to sort of be a home bod with two little girls, a wife, of course, and Christine. Do you feel as though you've got that behind yourself now, and you can focus more staying at home?
I think so. Look, Australian racing is in a very healthy position. I think we've got, with the exclusion of Japan, I think our prize money is as good as anywhere in the world, including Hong Kong. And for me, that is a real attractive thing to be here in Australia. The other thing is that I'm at the top of my game, and I've worked very hard to stay in Australia and base myself and build my name and my profile, you know, as an Australian jockey. And you know, I feel like I'm now getting the rewards for that work I put in, you know, not only 5 years ago, but 15 years ago when I moved to Ron Quinton's at Randwick as an apprentice at 19 years old. You know, I've worked very hard at being respectful to those people that employ me, to the trainers I ride for, to the owners I ride for, being upfront and honest. And, you know, I feel like I'm getting the rewards for the seeds that I planted or have planted over the years. And, you know, I don't feel that it'd be, you know, a good move now to hop up and move. I would love to go and ride in Hong Kong on a more permanent basis at some stage. Maybe towards the end of my career, I seriously considered it going last year after I'd done so well over there in 2013 at the back end of their season. But look, the bottom line is, the grass always seems greener on the other side of the fence, and that's not necessarily the case. And I don't think there's any denying that the position I'm in here at home is a very good one. My family are very comfortable. I've got two young kids, and of all the places I've travelled and lived and spent time, there's no place like Australia, and there's no place like home. So, look, having spent quite a bit of time overseas last year in Japan and travelling to Hong Kong regularly, you know, and I don't see any need to change that. I can still ride here in Australia and travel to Hong Kong if required for the major meetings, and I can see that as something that can work well for me. So, like I said, it's about building the blocks and, you know, capitalising on the blocks that are built. And racing or life is a game of opportunity, and if opportunities come, you take them. And, you know, that's what I've tried to do in my life and my career so far. And I'm very thankful to have a very supportive wife. You know, like I said, two young children. Spent 3 months away from them this year, and that's hard on them. And, you know, I respect that, but I'm also very thankful that, you know, they allow me to take that opportunity to progress as a human being and as a jockey. And you know, so far it's been great, but at the end of the day, I've got two young children, and, you know, I want to give them the life that I've had, and show them the respect that my parents showed me. And for me, it's important to be there for them, because they are my life for at the end of the day.
How hard is it for your partner, your wife particularly? Probably the children wouldn't notice it, but you're in the sweat baths a lot, you know, to get down to 55 or 56 kilos. That would create mood swings, I'm sure. So it could be tough.
It's not easy. And, you know, that's something I've learnt to do over the years, is manage my weight. And as I've gotten older and my profile's risen, you know, and spending time overseas, you know, England in particular, you know, I've learnt that, you know, really I've learnt to manage my weight well and manage what weight I ride. That's a hard thing, because trainers and owners and even you as a competitive person, you know, you want to ride the winners, and if they've got 54 and a half, you want to ride that weight. But at the end of the day, I've found that over the last couple of years, when I've said, right, I'm not riding below 55, I mean, obviously for the Melbourne and Caulfield Cups I do, but, you know, week in, week out, I just refuse to ride under 55, 55 and a half, and at off-peak times, you know, when the carnival's finished, I won't ride much under 56, and I've found by learning to manage that and saying no to the lighter rides, then I'm more stable in my manner, I'm more stable in my mood, and that helps be more comfortable at home, and it helps home be more comfortable with me. And when I say home, I mean my wife. And it creates a more balanced lifestyle, and I feel that has been significant in where I'm at today. And, you know, I used to waste so hard to ride the lightweights. You know, for me, 54 was light, and I used to push my body to the limits, even, you know, as a young man. And I've found, since I've stopped pushing to those limits and managing it a little better, that I'm more stable in both my home life and my professional life, and it's helped me, you know, I think, be the rider that I am today.
You got to carry the hopes of a nation, not only today in the Caulfield Stakes with Winx, but particularly in a couple of weeks in the Cox Plate. Today and every day you go out safe riding. I think it's marvellous the way that you boys and girls look out for each other, the camaraderie, whilst it's competitive and it's a fine line, shooting for, you know, you're riding for sheep stations, aren't you, at the right time of the year. But there's still that healthy respect, and safety is paramount.
Well, safety is paramount, and I think, you know, the stewards obviously have become very hard in this department. But at the end of the day, it's for the benefit of everyone, because it creates fair racing. If you've got interference and half the field's out of, you know, no one goes home happy then. The punters don't get a fair run. The owners don't get a fair run. If there's no interference, you might be unlucky. You mightn't get the run you want. But if there's no interference, well, you know, or little interference, then, you know, everyone gets a run for their money. And I think at the end of the day, That's what everyone wants, a fair go. And if you get a fair go as a trainer, as a jockey, as an owner, you know, may the best horse win.
You're a champion. Good on you. Good luck today, as I say, and good luck in 2 weeks' time and right through the carnival, because you seem to rise to the occasion. And thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on the show.